blood has been spilled on the holy altar. A city is ravaged, and innocents are put to the sword. Vengeance is mine, says the king. This is the quest for power.
Welcome to the Quest for Power, where we are raiding and reviewing all the European monarchs from the fall of Western Roman Empire to World War I. I am always your unreliable narrator host, Michael, and joining me on this adventure into the Second Burgundian Kingdom is Roberto. It's been a little bit.
It has. I have been busy with work and classes.
And I am busy just being a parent.
Yeah, you have it worse. You actually have to wake up whenever they have to. So,
yeah. I mean, it's not like it was a shock or anything, but when the reality comes to you that there is no day off, I mean, there are some days that it's just like, you know, they're adorable, wouldn't trade them for the world, but you just want 5 seconds.
I mean, Michael, there are days off. It's called leaving them with their grandparents.
I mean, yeah, that is true. You got that.
Or send them off to Spain for a month.
Send them off to Spain for
a month. Just do what my parents did. Leave me with my grandparents for a whole month.
The grandparents would love that.
Yeah.
Wife, on the other hand, not so much.
I get that. It's always the wife. No, I didn't like being sent away for a month. I'm like, but my stuff, my friends, I miss it.
I was camping all the time, but my dad was with me camping and scouts, so wasn't ever really quite homesick.
Yeah, I got sent to Florida from Texas all the time, so it's just like,
oh yeah, I can see.
And it
that.
Was like for the summer or for like winter, so I was just like, I didn't have a summer at home until I was 16 and had my first job.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Alrighty, well, let's get into previously on Quest for Power. Princes Gundiac and Kilbrick pull the Burgundians from near extinction into becoming a powerhouse in Roman Gaul. Gundiac ties himself to the kingmaker Ricimer by wedding the Roman general's sister. Together, they produce Princes Gedeisel and Gundobad. We just ranked Gedeisel. We are going to rank Gundobad. Gundobad will go to play with the big boys in Italy, and he will become the power behind the Western Imperial throne.
What I'm hearing is, if he doesn't get up to par today, if he ends up as a lesser noble, I just want to burn him, because at that point, if you're that high, can't keep it. I just want to burn you at that point. So if you can't get the legendary monarch, I want to burn you at the stake.
High stakes already.
Yes. Wow.
I love it. What about his wife?
I mean, she's a workout supplement, so it's fine.
And after that, Gundobad goes, you know, power behind the throne. It's been fun. I had a good time, but I need to go back home. And he comes home and ascends the throne with his brother Gedeisel once his uncle dies. Gedeisel tries to seize control over the kingdom by committing high treason and failed spectacularly, which led to the extinguishment of his royal line and the massacre of all of his supporters. Did I miss anything? It's been a little bit.
No, that sounds pretty about right. Gedeisel was very much a, alrighty, I see, you know, you're doing a good job. Maybe I can do. Oh, never mind. Let me betray you. Oh, I got betrayed again. Oh, there, I'm surrounded. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck. I'm dead.
That was a roller coaster, if I remember right. That was a roller coaster of an episode. Speaking of which, if you have not listened to the last episode, you really should, because this is like part two of that episode. That's going to happen a lot in our podcast. They're just the way it's lined up.
You have to listen in order. You can't just jump in whenever. I'm sorry. Them's the rules.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably just start at that one if you want, because that's a new generation. But other than that,
no, gotta start from the beginning, all the way from episode one.
Oh
god, listen to the whole thing. Go back.
I don't want no. You don't have to torture yourself with that.
I did it. You can do it too. It's fun.
So, in the beginning of this episode, we will actually turn our attention to Gundobad's wife and queen, Carotene.
All right, so she's a very delicious workout supplement. This is why Gundobad did such a good job with ruling. He just, you know, if you take the keratin all the time, you'll be fine. You'll get the gains. You'll have all the energy. It's why he was so successful in battle. 10 and everything, you know, she does great.
It could be close to creatine or it could be kerosene.
I think I said carotene the last time, so.
Yeah, you did say carotene, but that also could sound like kerosene pretty close, you know, that in terms of burning the whole forest down.
Well, she lights his heart on fire.
Oh, there you go. Very, very well done.
Yes.
Around 501, Gundobad's pious wife, Carotene, played an instrumental role in converting her son, Prince Sigismund, from Arian to Nicene Christianity.
Hey, that's a good thing. Good job. 10 out of 10 for oath of devotion.
It's funny because you're Orthodox and like, yes, that's what you believe in. And I'm like, stop killing each other over Arian and Nicene. It doesn't matter.
No, they have small differences, Michael. Get over it.
We're not even into the one essence versus multiple essences.
let's not get that debate started yet. Oh. No, but they're no longer Arian, they're Nicene, which is the correct thing as of now.
Yes. Gundobad, I think, is still Arian, so, you know, you gotta
Well, that's
that.
That's a zero for a food devotion from me.
But Gundobad didn't object to his son being converted, despite being a staunch Arian faith on the outside. But it also appears that he himself might have secretly converted to Christianity in his heart, but he was, like, in too precarious of a political situation with his nobility to do so. As a king, your power becomes is behind your nobility. Your nobility is what gives you power if they agree that you can rule. And his nobility are very staunch Arians, and any sect of Christianity, if you're not of that sect, they don't like you. So he's kind of, I can see it, he's kind of held to that standard, so to speak.
All right, Gundobad, I have a piece of advice for you. Invite the ball to a wedding, and then put red in front of it.
Oh, no. Then you're violating guest rights, and then you're doomed to be cursed.
It's fine. You don't have to do it yourself. You just get someone else to do it.
Speaking of which, I think guest rights are fine in Burgundians, but when we get to Ireland, you mess with guest rights, oh, you're done.
Yes.
There's a reason why Tolkien does not, you know, go for that.
Mm-hmm.
I would give Carotene credit for converting Gundobad as well. And if you need more evidence, he allowed her to build a church dedicated to Archangel Michael in Lyon that also had a nunnery attached to it.
Hmm, that's really cool.
So like an Arian is building a Nicene Christian church. That's pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first church of its kind to be specifically dedicated to Saint Michael the Archangel in Gaul, and as a result, Saint Michael's influence actually spreads like wildfire across the Western Empire collapsed regions because of this little church here, which is pretty cool.
Oh, shoot, that's pretty awesome.
And it is also the first burial church for a barbarian kingdom where the royal family is like intended to be buried. Not even the Franks do that right away. So that's really cool. And if you need even more influence over her husband on ecclesiastical matters, a bishop named Marcellus of Die approached Carotene and asked her to get tax relief from the king, and Carotene was also able to convince Gundobad to grant that request. So he's really just not only building churches, but granting tax reliefs, which normally he would do the opposite. You would tax the other religion.
Mm-hmm.
And Carotene's religious passion, though, kind of went the Saint Radegund route. She fell into fanaticism and became an ascetic. Unfortunately, for Gundobad anyway, one of the things it appears she swore off was sex, which...
Oh.
It's kind of a problem if you're a king.
You need an heir and a spare and some more spares.
Yeah, he only has one heir right now, and he could definitely use a spare. Also, it's not a good look for a warrior king to have a wife who isn't having sex with him. These guys are still brutes. Like, yes, they're more Romanized, but at their culture, their core, they're still brutes. So, you know, that's also not a good look, and that makes him look weak. But it appears they agreed to go their separate ways. I am guessing he encouraged her to move into the monastery, but there is no record. Oh, yes, nunnery.
Convent.
Yeah. There is no record of him ordering her to become a nun, though.
Get thee to a nunnery!
So that's kind of interesting. You would think that Tours would love to shove in the face that, you know, that he did that to his good holy wife, forced her into a nunnery. But he didn't, so that's kind of interesting. The Bishop Avitus of Vienne attempted to keep the royal couple together, and he sent some serious passive-aggressive letters about marriages and divorces without good reason to Gundobad. So he sent a flurry of letters of, like, this is why it's good to have a, you know, a marriage and why marriage is meant forever. Just real strong passive-aggressive notes. It's like high school all over again.
I don't miss high school at all.
No. Regardless of the bishop's feelings about divorce, the royal couple eventually separated. She moved into St. Michael the Archangel Monastery, where she remained until she died in 506.
Oh, and she's that dead.
Ends the life and reign of Caratine the Pious of House Burgundy, the first of her name, Queen Consort of the Burgundians.
And when do we have records of her, like, coming to power?
That's a great question.
I'm just going to assume that she married Gundobad and became queen at the same time.
Yeah. We don't really... Their marriage records are horrible at this time. It's not like late Middle Ages or during not even the Tudor era, the Plantagenet era. We'd at least know these things. Anyway, even though she died, we're going to continue the story, because when his ex-wife died, Gundobad must have still had some feelings towards her, because he secretly gave generous gifts in her memory to the monastery that they built together. So that's kind of sweet.
Oh, that's some nice bardic inspiration.
Yeah. A little time before his mother's death, so we're flipping to the son now, in 505, Sigismund was appointed as sub-king to Geneva to replace his dead uncle, who, if you remember, fucked around and found out.
His uncle. Didn't he get his head chopped off and tossed into the water?
No, that would be his kid. He was slain at the altar.
Oh, yeah. And I had this whole, like,
yeah,
movie-esque, like, death scene.
Yeah, Gedeisel. Yeah, you had such a great death scene that he almost wasn't burned alive, but your ruthlessness came out in the end.
Oh, no, he's still the top scorer.
Yeah. Over in Lyon, sometime after Gundobad separated from Sigismund's mother, he remarried a woman whose name has been lost to history.
Ah, yes, I know that name.
Yeah. Yeah, so Queen Consort Jane Doe bore him a name named Godemar in memory of his dead brother who didn't betray him. Another reason Gregory of Tours' stories don't act up. You would not name your son in the name of a brother that you hate. That just does not work.
Yeah. It was like, if I don't like my sibling, why would I ever want their name associated with my children?
Yeah, exactly.
Super much respect for them. Could never do that. Just, you know, sorry, kiddo. I'm giving you a new name. you should now be named Octavian.
There you go. I mean, they do love their Romanization, so. Despite
Octavianus.
Clovis's involvement in the Great Betrayal of 500, see last episode, Gundobad and him began to patch things up around 505.
Yeah, they started working, they started crocheting together and, like, yeah, learning how to sew.
Yeah, and then you have the whole song and dance routine that goes on how they resolve their differences and, you know, things like that.
And it was an enemies to lovers, yeah, thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, also around this time, Clovis was looking for any reason to start a war with the weak Visigothic King Alaric. He's like, I will find anything it takes for me to go and kill this guy.
Is this Alaric II?
Yes, Alaric II.
Nice.
The Ostrogothic meddling king over in Italy, Theodoric the Fine, was very aware of Clovis's intention, and it did not go unnoticed by him that Clovis and Gundobad were getting a little friendly with one another.
Yeah, they were. Enemies to lovers, I always say. Best kind of story.
In 506, Gundobad received a letter from Theodoric, the wannabe emperor. Yes, I'm going to keep coming with different things for him. In the letter, Theodoric basically said, "Be at peace, or I will support the Visigoths and kill you." And Gundobad just left the message unread.
Hey, you copied that from me.
Yeah, they did.
I was gonna say, like, hey, wait a second.
Yep. I definitely listened to that episode and then proceeded to write this.
Yes, it's great. I was gonna say, I was about to make a joke, but you stole my thunder there.
Yep. Shortly after he received the message from Theodoric, he received another letter from Clovis asking him if he's ready to do this thing. And Gundobad sent some forces to aid in the destruction of the Visigoths. In 507, war broke out. It didn't last long because Alaric was easily defeated at the Battle of Vouille near Poitiers before Theodoric the Late could come through with his threat.
Ah, so it was a lot of I'm going to leave you on red, and then it's like, I bet you won't come. And he just...
Yeah, exactly.
You have to go through my territory. I'm going to get there before you do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I don't think that Gundobad went himself. I think he just sent guys. He's just like, go ahead and help my bro out.
Well, of course. You don't want to be the king. You don't want to go. You don't personally want to be at the alliance, you know, yeah, with your alliance forces. You just want to send someone you trust. Like, all right, deal with this. Go fight, because, you know, I have to deal with stuff in my kingdom, which is super unstable.
Yeah.
Because, like, my idiot of a brother, you know, made things unstable, so now I have to deal with this, and I have, you know, my kids to deal with.
Yeah.
And I have, and also, you know, if Theodoric the Lame is, threatening something, at least need to be able to, like, watch my border.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
here's a small force, go help, and then, you know, at least I could just say I sent someone.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. Yeah. And that way you're part of the battle.
He sent his own Gebica. There we go.
Gebica. There
Jebica.
We go.
Jebica.
Jebica. Jebediah.
Jebediah. Yeah, he sent Jebediah down to deal with it.
As a result of Alaric II's death, Kingdom of Toulouse completely collapsed. In 508, Clovis just mopped up what was left of the Kingdom of Toulouse, secured his lands, and withdrew back into his own territory, leaving the rest of the Visigothic territory in southern Gaul for Gundobad to grab for himself.
I guess the Kingdom of Toulouse had a kingdom to lose.
That he did. Didn't.
Oh, my puns are horrible and I love them.
They're fantastic.
Your dad, you should love them.
My wife loves them more. Clovis, though, in a thank you for leaving Gundobad, giving him troops, left some Frankish forces to help with the conquest. So that was nice of him.
Oh, well, that's very nice. You know,
kind of you scratch your back, I'll scratch. Yeah, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours type deal.
Yeah, fun stuff.
Gundobad marched to Narbonne and defeated Alaric's illegitimate son and successor, and he took that city from the Visigoths. And the Burgundians are really high on victory. I mean, they it is just a mopping up operation. They don't really have to do too much. So they go for the big guns. They go for Arles, or Arles, France under siege. Unfortunately, Theodoric did come through on his promise to kick his ass. Fresh Ostrogothic troops forced Gundobad to lift the siege. And while he was on his back foot, he was defeated again in a counterattack at Narbonne.
Well, I guess he fucked around and found out like his brother did.
Yes, he did. He just pushed it just a little too far. He then fell back to Avignon, where Theodoric's forces once again puts his forces to flight, and he captured the city.
So, yeah, he's not doing well.
He lost all of his conquered land.
Yeah, you fucked up bad, Gundobad. Guess but, you're pretty bad.
But he and his warriors still had a hell of a loot that they were able to keep in their retreat.
But the conquests.
So it was not a conquest. It was a raiding expedition.
Are you just reorganizing how you say what this whole plan was?
Yep. No, I am just showing you how a king would rewrite history. That's exactly what you would do if you're a king, right? If this happened, you would just say, hey, I had no intention to keep that. I was just raiding it.
Oh, no, I just happened to take the cities and, you know, they were under my control, but I just wanted the loot. Yeah. So, you know, I wasn't planning on fighting Theodoric. I just wanted to get loot.
Yeah.
I just happened to have troops there and we just retreated because the loot was way more important.
Yeah, yeah.
Still going negatively on him for whatever points we give him for that. I forget which one it is.
That could be a number of things.
Royal power,
because,
maybe.
Because, yeah, we don't do just fighting. Like, yeah, royal power, but that has a lot more than just, yeah, fighting. So Gundivad is like, oh, crap. I bit off a little more than I can chew. He went, threw up his hands, went, fine, I get it. I'm done. I won't attack anymore. Despite all of these setbacks, Clovis died in 511 before him.
Oh.
And Clovis's kingdom was divided because the Franks are idiots. And Burgundy became the most prestigious kingdom in Gaul.
Oh. You see this really nice Frankish kingdom? Let's cut it into fours.
Yeah, threes. See, threes or fours? Fours, you're correct. You're right. No,
hey,
four.
I guess.
I forgot the first one.
There we go. I guessed. I guess just cut it to fours and then, oh, would you look at that? Burgundy's the biggest one and most prosperous one. And we have all this loot. We're rich, baby.
Yeah, he's doing pretty good. He's doing so well that he gained the favor of the Eastern Romans in Constantinople and was given the title Magister Militum in the East.
All right, that's more royal power for him.
He struck a peace deal with Theodoric in 513, and they maintained a peace for the rest of his life. As the end was drawing near, he completely threw away Burgundian succession precedent, and he made his eldest son, Sigismund, the sole heir to the throne.
Oh.
Basically, I know what happens when you divide up a kingdom or give partial power. We're not doing that. Just Sigismund gets the throne.
Okay, that's getting a lot of points from me.
He's installing primogeniture. Yeah.
Oh, I do love me some primogeniture.
He learned his lesson, unlike the Franks, who will never learn their lesson.
But you told me there's only five episodes in this series.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we'll no.
So, yeah, that he created a system that would have prevented a divided kingdom of Burgundy. And the story goes on, though. On the eve of his death, Gundobad secretly converted to Christianity and was baptized by Avitus of Vienne, converted to Nicene Christianity. In 516, okay. Gundobad passed away from being old in late antiquity. That ends the life and reign of Gundobad of House Burgundy, the first of his name, Kinslayer, Kingslayer, Commander-in-Chief of the Romans, King of the Burgundians.
Yeah, that's a life.
Yeah.
Okay.
You ready to rate the power couple?
So we have no clue what he did in the last 3 years of his life.
No.
Peace. I know what he did.
What did he do?
He poured himself a nice Burgundian wine.
Oh, yes.
And he died with a belly full of wine. And yes. You know the Tyrion line?
Yes.
That's how he died.
Love it. I agree. Yeah.
I'm not going to say it because I know we're explicit, but that's already too graphic. but if you watch Game of Thrones, the Tyrion line that starts with, when I die, I want to have a belly full of wine and something else.
Something to deal with probably his wife.
Well, his wife's dead.
No, his second wife.
Oh, a named wife, yes.
Yeah, Jane Doe.
Oh, yeah, Jane Doe. Yeah, exactly. There we go. Alrighty. Royal power.
Alrighty, so when we rank a queen consort, they have different criteria than a sovereign. Their royal power is more based on influence than raw power and control. They just don't have that. So, you know, you're comparing apples and oranges.
Oh, of course. However, she seemed to be more involved with religion than with actually, you know, influencing anything in the court. So I'm going to give her 0.
Yeah, that's she did get her husband to grant tax relief, which is something with the court. Yes, it was religious, but it's a political religious.
That's a 1 remember, then.
Cause, yeah. And yeah. So she was influenced in Christianity, but yeah. All right, I can see that.
Okay, yeah, just a tax relief. Yeah, I like tax relief. Taxes are horrible, especially for the people of lesser means. Only tax the rich.
Oh, she also, this is also what she was able to do. She was able to influence her husband to be a little more lenient to his prisoners to some extent. So 1. She was 5. Also able to do that.
That's a 1.5.
I will do 2.
Okay.
1 for each.
I'll give her 0.5 for leniency on prisoners, because he was still torturing prisoners, probably.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Definitely. All of them were.
So that's a 3.5 royal power.
How long was Gundobad's reign?
Let me see here. I'm going to guess it was about 36 years.
Yeah, yeah. Dead on the money.
Yeah.
There's a reason why in future scripts I have not told you certain dates.
What? I can't do my mathematical analysis anymore.
Well, to be fair, some of them, they don't. I'm not even going to try and guess their dates. That's a conversation. Okay. Time.
Oh, man. I can't even guess. He's not going to let me guess, guys. Well, it's not even guessing if I just like try to find a mathematical like number for it. Because I'm like, that's me. I'm a data driven person. So
I'm married to one, so I can understand that.
Yeah. Alrighty. So Gundabad's royal power. All right, lay it on me before I give a point out.
While not spotless, he has a very impressive record. Damn good Game of Thrones player. We got a lot here to go through.
Alrighty, let's do it.
Literally became the power behind the Western Imperial Throne.
10.
Popped up the usurper Librius, created a usurper in Clyceris. So he propped a usurper and he created his own usurper. He didn't keep that position of the, he didn't keep Magister Militum of the West when it became clear he was about to get run over by the East. So he made an intelligent move and he secured his power in the growing powerhouse kingdom of Burgundy versus clinging to power in a decrepit empire.
Uh-huh.
He took advantage of Theodoric the Great and Odoacer deadlocked in a brutal war, going raiding and enriching himself and had no real repercussions, and even got paid by Theodoric to have hostages that he took back. He secured ties with the other powerhouse kings, Clovis and Theodoric, through marriage. He got duped by his brother. He lost a battle, but he was able to regroup and annihilate his brother's forces. Eliminated all of his heirs and secured complete rule over the kingdom. Even though Clovis attacked him with his brother, he was able to set his differences aside, pair up with Clovis, and gain decisive victories against the Visigoths, gaining quite a bit of loot along the way. Got his ass handed to him by Daddy Theodoric the Protector, but he was able to keep all the loot and only lost land that he conquered. His kingdom did not contract from when it was handed to him. It stayed the same, his borders. He was given Magister Militum and Patricus of the Eastern Empire, which is not a disaster. It's actually quite powerful. Hmm. He died of old age. I say he won the Game of Thrones of his lifetime.
Yeah, I cannot give him anything less than a 10.
Yeah, 10.
Because even though he had those rises and falls, it was one of those things where he still came out ahead. Like, because even the falls weren't that big of a fall. Sure, he lost the battle, but who the fuck slayed his brother brutally at the end of that war? Like, who becomes Magister Militum for not just one, but 2 Roman empires?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's an usurper? And, like, who's the power behind the throne of the Western Roman Empire? Like, who was able to just, like, navigate all these alliances? Like, good or bad? Even though I was like, yeah, he has to get, like, a 9. I was like, no. He has to get a 10 because he was able to still come out ahead despite losing. And yeah, he got his ass handed to him, but as you said, he didn't lose territory that he had already. He only lost a thing, and it's one of those, like, yeah, I came out with a bunch of loot, and at the same time, this is fine with me, because loot as well also is fine in these, like, pre-feudal cultures.
Oh yeah, loot, literally kings of these cultures. Loot is how these kings are given their power. Is because they give loot to their warriors when we get into the Anglo-Saxons. This is big time. They're called King of the Rings because they are expected to give their people, their war bands, loot.
Yeah, and that's one of the things is like, you have to give them loot, and that's how they stay with you, because if you're able to continuously get loot, you're worth staying with because your warriors are going to get paid. They can keep fighting. Yeah, so I can't give them anything less than a 10.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, again, if it was battle, different story, but this isn't battliness. This is power.
This is literally a combination of everything, and
yeah,
you can lose the battle, but if you ultimately win the war,
yeah,
that's perfect.
Yeah, I fully agree. 10.
Easy. That is a 20 for royal power for Gundobad. Oh, God. All right, infamy.
All right, he's got some good stuff here.
Okay, Carotene first, please. Ladies first.
Oh, sorry. I got nothing.
There we go. Zero.
I completely forgot about her. Sorry.
See, even he, even our unreliable narrator forgets about the women in history that we're raiding here today.
Terrible.
For shame of you. For shame.
Shame. Ting, ting.
All right. Good and the bad. No.
All right. So, abandoning a man you just prop up as emperor isn't the nicest thing in the world.
I love it. Yeah, you're emperor now. Actually, I'm about to lose my position, so toodaloo.
He violated the sacred protection of sanctuary. He spilt blood on the holy altar by murdering a holy bishop in the process of executing his brother.
Yeah.
He then drowned the wife of his treacherous brother in the Rhine by cutting, and he cut off the head of his eldest nephew before throwing it down a well. It's a little bit much. I get killing all of your heirs and their supporters, but it's a little excessive cutting off the head and throwing it down a well.
This is literally me playing Crusader Kings when I have a sibling and I'm like, oh, I just captured his whole family? Execution, baby!
You gonna cut off heads and throw them down wells?
Oh, I do way worse, actually.
I don't know what is with this family and frickin' wells.
I mean, it's just showcasing that you're not, you know, I want to make sure that you pollute everything around you.
Yeah. I didn't think of that.
Pretty good. Now you can't, because even, like, now that your remains are there, because you're not buried, you can't go to God.
That's right.
Because you're not on consecrated ground.
I didn't.
So it's an ultimate fuck you.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
It's a good thing I have someone on who actually knows about religion. Yeah.
I mean, I know a little bit, but like, it's not like I'm a reader at church or anything.
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, because you have to bury them on church ground. So if you put them in a well.
Yeah, you have to bury them on consecrated ground.
Yeah, so they're screwed. They're not going to heaven.
That makes sense why a later person is sainthood. Okay, interesting. Yeah,
okay.
Is that it? Yeah,
oh,
that's it.
10. you can't, like, I can't give you less than that for literally killing women and children and, like, killing a priest in a church along with your brother in a church.
Yeah.
And then, like, backstabbing people, like that. I can't give you less than 10 because it's
totally backstab. Who did he backstab?
The person he put on the throne.
Oh, that, yeah.
I was like, oh, you're in power. Oh, fuck, I'm about to get out. Oh, I'm about to usurp myself. Oh, let me leave now. You deal with your situation.
I again forgot about that because I was more focused on spilling blood on the holy altar.
Yeah. So, literally, he backstabs people. Literally. Literally. He kills priests in a church. He violates sanctuary. He murdered his brother's whole side of the family.
Yeah.
Like, I can't give him less than a 10.
All right, I'll give you that.
All right, what are you going to give him?
10, you convinced me.
that's a 20 for infamy. Oh, God, he's already our highest score.
Easily.
All righty. Oath of Devotion. All right, Carotene this time.
I am going to go a bit of a rant here. I am absolutely shocked and appalled that this woman did not become a saint. If I need to come up with miracles to get her to be venerated, for Francis to venerate her, I will. Like,
well, you know, Did she have miracles attributed to her name?
Did a lot of saints have miracles attributed to their name?
They converted their domain. That's how they became.
She converted her son. And
it's just a son.
Her husband.
They're already kind of Christian. I saw she was dead when her husband converted.
We are going to get some kings that are going to be saints, and it is absolutely ridiculous that they are saints.
I literally have Vladimir the Great on Tsar Power.
I know. In addition, all right, let's go on why I think she should be a saint.
Okay. Let's go. Let me hear you out.
Converted her son to Nicene Christianity. Okay. She's may have secretly converted Gundobad to Nicene Christianity. She built the first church of the barbarian kingdoms, which has the purpose of interning kings and queens on consecrated ground. She built a church that was the first of its kind dedicated to Saint Michael the Archangel, which then drastically influenced Gaul in terms of that saint's cult. She influenced her husband to grant tax relief to an ecclesiastical institution. Here's the big one. She went full fanatic ascetic. Against her royal duty to the kingdom to produce more heirs, she swore off sex, which led to be separated from king and the loss of political power as queen consort. So she sacrificed. It looks like she willingly entered this monastery or this nunnery and became a nun. After doing this episode, it seems like Clotilda and Radegund did exactly what she does, and they come after her. In terms of they look up to her for how female-oriented monasteries are. Clotilda's sister Crona may have also been inspired by her to become a nun and join the monastery. The nunnery.
Okay. Convent.
Convent.
Yeah. Okay. I see. I get your point. She should have been made a saint. But she's not. And she doesn't have they have to have miracles attributed to their name when they're being prayed to.
The and fact that she's married to Gundobad is like a miracle in and of itself.
I mean, yes. did he do all the murdery things after she died?
Hold on.
Because, like, if I'm seeing here... Oh, no, it would have been
No, she didn't.
Before, because it's... She died after he did all that.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Yeah, I'm seeing here, because I go to Geisel died in 501, so...
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Yeah, I think she should at least be beatified, and then we can discuss sainthood. But you know, she has to have some miracles attributed to her prayers first. if you can go to the Vatican and make your case to Pope Francis, I will support you the whole time. Quest for power trip to the Vatican City right now.
I need Bree's help for that.
Yeah, let's get Bree involved. I may just start saying I may just start telling Pope Francis to. did not think of himself as God's voice on earth, and he's part of a council. it's five people in charge, not one.
How many points are you gonna give to her?
Nine.
I'm going 10. Okay. She went full aesthetic. She went full.
Actually, full you throttle. Convinced me. Yeah. I forgot about the asceticism. She went full throttle. She could willingly join the nunnery.
She walked the walk, talked. Yeah. She became the inspiration behind Clotilda, which is one of the biggest saints in France.
Okay. Yeah. So she's just a 20 for her. Yeah. what was the thing I say when I'm like, oh yeah, Oathbreaker or like.
Oh, Oathkeeper?
You've been dubbed an Oathkeeper. I'll figure it out.
Protector of the faith.
You are now a protector of the faith, Carotene. And along with these gains, buy it for $29.99. Alrighty. Now for the complete opposite. Gundobad.
He spilt a bishop's blood on the holy altar when murdering said bishop.
Zero!
I can't give him anything.
You are now an oath breaker! Yeah, that was quick.
I don't even need to say anymore.
No, yeah. Bardic is... Bardic inspiration. Creatine, please.
She was the driving force behind multiple conversions. Christian poets have a lot to work with in that.
I give her five. Yeah, I give her five for that. I mean, if she was an influence for
Yeah.
Actually, no. I'm gonna go down to three, mostly because she was an influence, but she doesn't have.
She doesn't get the credit as being the influence.
Exactly.
Cortoka, and she should, but she does not.
No, she does not, and because of that, she's not a saint, so she's not that important in the whole regards of things, and because of that, she may have walked the walk and talked the talk, but it's like the same people. It's the same thing where you have other people who do this consistently,
yeah.
But they also don't get rewarded for credit. But remember, she's not doing this for credit. She's doing this for her eternal soul.
Yeah, exactly.
So if anything, she wouldn't be that happy with like, oh, I'm getting rewarded for this. Like, no, my only reward is getting to heaven.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with one. So many people are behind conversions. Just look at every single kingdom we will do, we will have a conversion.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna give her the three just for like potentially influencing Clotilda and the other ones.
Yeah,
but I'm like doing the churchy things, but like she has an I think she may have an epitaph in the church or something. I don't know.
She does have an epitaph.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, she does have an epitaph.
Cool.
Yes, she does. Cool.
Okay, at least that, because she did build the darn thing. So
yeah.
Okay, cool. Alrighty, Gundobad.
I mean, his life is a saga, right?
I don't think I have to like make this sound better than it is already, because like, you could make a movie about this guy, and I would sit down and watch it.
100%. You could make a TV show on this guy's life. You could go Game of Thrones on this guy's life.
He's literally a Littlefinger, but if he's successful,
yeah.
If Littlefinger were successful,
Littlefinger would have wanted.
Yeah, he's literally. This is what Littlefinger should have been.
Yes.
Minus trying to like marry a 13-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotta go 10. He's a saga.
Yeah, that's a full on 10. That's a 20 for Bardic Inspiration for Gundobad and a 4 for Carotene. Alrighty. Legacy.
Alright, so we finally got a together category, which is adorable. They created the first church, specifically burials of royals. It's going to become a huge thing in Western European history.
Which church is this again? The St. Michael's?
St. Michael. The St. Michael one.
Saint Michel? Okay.
A church which no longer exists today.
Oh, nice. Okay. So they built a church that lasted for quite a bit and was used to bury royals.
Correct. And so with that, they spread, you know, St. Michael's influence across Gaul by doing that. So that was pretty cool for both of them.
Yes.
St. Michael. For Carotene, she set the standard for good Christian queens of the period. Every, like, you know, Clotilda, Radegund, and I'm pretty sure Brunhilde also takes some sort of inspiration from her standard.
Okay.
She also sets the standard for female monasteries, also known as convents.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a 5 for the monastery, for the convents, and the setting the standard for the queen regnants.
It's a quiet standard. Like, it's not well known, but it's a quiet standard.
Yeah, I'll give it a 5.
I'll do 4.
Okay. Alrighty, legacy for Gundobad.
This man set his heir up so well. His kingdom borders were the same at the end of his reign as they were at the beginning of his reign, except for the coffers were a lot fuller. At death, he raised the kingdom of Burgundy to the most prestigious kingdom in Gaul. He eliminated co-rulership and instituted primogeniture, which gave his heir supreme authority, which I just huge to me after living with the Franks for so long. He tied his dynasty to other powerhouses with the Ostrogoths and the Franks. Like, he pretty big powers at that time, and I already said the other part. So that's what I got. He doesn't leave much behind in terms of like stuff. But, like, he set his dynasty up so well.
Okay, I'm thinking an 8.
Yes, I'd have to agree.
Because, like, I would need for this, like, it's also knowing how many episodes we're doing, which is kind of hitting me.
I know, I'm trying not to put that into my head. I'm trying to do it. How would I see it that's how I'm trying to do these legacy ones, because you got to kind of look a little in the future, but not too much. Like, if they have an afterlife of their own, like, we'll have a king that has an entire afterlife of his own, like 1,000 years after he died.
Okay, so okay, removing that from my head, I'm still gonna keep it an 8 because he did leave some stuff around, and then he set up a lot of stuff to basically help aid his successor. However, you know, he's still subject to nobilities and all the Frankish customs and cultures, which I think is gonna, you know, he may have done this, but I feel like, because you mentioned a Gundamar in there,
I think I'm gonna do a 9. Nine. There's something holding me back from a 10, but here's the thing is I think the Franks, who are ultimately obviously the victors of, spoiler alert if you've listened to our previous episodes, they did so well at rewriting this history. So it's like trying to peel back that veil of what did they rewrite based on the stuff that they allowed to get through.
Makes sense. Okay, I'm going to keep it at 8 just because I feel like that's what this legacy should be.
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that he didn't, the thing that doesn't push it to 10 is he doesn't leave like a bunch of marks all over that are like seen today. Like they're all erased by future generations.
He's very prevalent in his area.
Yeah.
And like he does things, but I don't think he does enough to like influence other places extraordinarily so. Like I'm giving him credit for setting up his heir, but not for extending past his borders.
In like extraordinary well. I don't know too many kings that set up their heir this freaking well. This is not normal. Exactly. I need to make that clear.
Alrighty. So we have the total scores.
Alright, let's first do Carotene.
Carotene. A 3.5 in royal power, 0 in infamy, 20 in oath of devotion, 4 in bardic inspiration, a 9 in legacy, giving us a total of 36.5.
That's not bad.
No, that is, if we don't count Gundabad, that makes her the highest scorer right now.
Wow.
Yes.
Let's do this first with her. In the annals of history, should she be crowned as a legendary queen? Is she just good enough to retire in the convent as a lesser noble, or should she be burned at the stake? Which obviously not.
No burning at the stake for Carotene. I'm gonna do her a solid and just let her retire to her convent as a lesser noble.
I think so too. I agree.
I think it's what she would have wanted.
Yeah, that is probably what she would have wanted that we know of.
That we know of.
We don't know. This was also probably, you know, this was a Christian monks writing this stuff down.
And it's also true.
Who liked their women meek and mild.
Yeah. Alrighty. So that's lesser noble for Carotene. All right, for Gundobad, you ready for
Do
this?
Do we really need to? Oh, yeah, let's.
A 20 in royal power, a 20 in infamy, a 0 in oath of devotion, a 20 in bardic inspiration, and a 17 in legacy, for a total of 77 points, making him by far the top scorer by almost double everyone else.
Well done.
Burning it to
me. Do we really need to go through this? This man's legendary.
For the sake of the listeners, yes.
All right. In the annals of history, should he be crowned as a legendary king, just good enough to retire as a lesser noble, or should he be burned at the stake? Legendary king.
Legendary. Wait. Yeah.
Legend.
Wait for it. Dairy.
Perfect. I mean, absolutely just really fun. Complete. Did not expect that. I knew he was powerful, but I did not realize that powerful.
Yeah, that was, oh my gosh. I was just seeing and I'm like, oh, that's the first, you know, perfect score. Oh, there's a second. Oh, okay. He got a 0. I was like, oh, shoot, there's a third. And I'm like, we have to give him 4 perfect scores? Like, what the heck? And then we're like,
I can't see a reason not to.
I mean, he has 3, which is better than everyone else so far, except for the only other perfect score we have is Carotene with a 20 in Oath of Devotion. So she took his Oath of Devotion score, basically.
Oh yeah, totally. Yep.
Yeah. Basically, she had to be godly for him to be sinful.
That's how a lot of the king-queen relationships work in the Dark Ages.
Yeah, so like, I need to sin so you can be reign-line and pure, my love.
Yeah, that's like Clotilda with Clovis. I mean...
Oh man, that is crazy. And to think that Gundiok only has a 33 and he's legendary monarch. And then the next one has a 77. And I will say, the way I don't like comparing future, you know, once we do like future kings and, you know, I look at their scores, I don't mind giving out a perfect score if I think they deserve it, because each time period is different.
Yeah, definitely.
So like, I could use it to like, all right, you know, this king did this and got a perfect score and this king did that. But like, sometimes it's, you know, it's how I feel at the time. Like, yeah, you know, this was really good playing the game for what he had available to him, versus like, oh, you know, he came in with a silver spoon in his mouth, his daddy set him up, he's a nepo baby basically.
Yeah, he's not Alexander the Great that had a Maserati sitting in the garage when he came to power.
Exactly. He's a, oh, things were going to shit because, you know, we,
his dad, you know, did set him up well. His dad married into the royal, you know, got into the built up the foundation, so he did do that well,
but he had to keep it.
Yeah, he had to keep it and take it to the next level.
Yeah, he had Rickimer helping him, but it's like, oh, I have a good, you know, an uncle who's willing to assist me with all this, but then I had to do the legwork afterwards.
It's not like
a certain former president who got a small amount of $1 million and still can't do anything.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think the real turning point in his life was when he got out of Rome. I think he got out at the right time. Absolutely, the right time.
It's knowing when to get out and what is best for you, and knowing when to retreat. Because at the end of the day, what's better than dying in battle? Surviving a battle.
Exactly.
Because you know what you can do after you survive a battle?
Maybe win. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can pull a miracle. A lot of battles are crazy. They are one of the crazy events in history that you can have all the things going for you into going into it. You have the best weapons, you have the best tactics, and still you lose.
All because you brought in Jedediah to your army. And I think that's what happened. He sent Jedediah to fight the Visigoths, and when they were returning, Jedediah did not do a good job.
Yeah, yeah, that is true.
That is our person is Jedediah.
Oh boy, we should not do that.
Why?
It's very close to my brother's name.
Oh. Well, that's your brother's fault for having a close name to that. It's a D, not a B.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, what's next on the docket?
Alrighty. So, brings us to the end of Caratine and Gundobad. Let us know what you thought of them. Do you agree with us on their fate? I don't see what we did wrong. Tell us. Yeah, we'll tell you that you tell us we did wrong, and we'll tell you that it's okay that you're mistaken.
I'm sorry. I'm never wrong. Unless you want some Russian dudes coming to your house later tonight. After you listen to this, do not say I'm wrong. Oh, sorry. Wrong podcast.
Dang, Tsar power keeps invading.
unless you want me to send Gundabad to you, to your church, you know. He has no qualms about anything.
No, he does not. A holy man, yes, I think your blood needs to be on that altar over there.
Oh, no, no, no. I know you're a very holy man. See? Chink. A hole. This is a holy sword.
You can catch us on Messenger at Facebook and Instagram at Quest for Power, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. This podcast is researched and scripted by me, Michael, and edited by Roberto. If you would like to support the show, you can do so by giving us a 5-star review on podchaser.com/questforpower. If that's not your thing, just telling someone about the podcast goes a long way. We'll review every 5-star review on Podchaser. Just note that the way we do episodes, it will be very delayed, but we'll get to it.
We do them ahead of time because I have a busy life schedule. I travel for my job, so I need to get things done early during the fall.
Yes, and also when we roll out benefits, you're going to see why. It takes a lot of resources to research and produce these episodes, but we love doing it. If you would like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a member of our royal court at thequestforpower.com to come chat with us on Discord and gain exclusive to extra episodes, like our first members episodes, which will be The Curse of Power. We will rate and review the kings and queens of Egypt. If that's not your thing, no big deal. Giving us a 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice or just telling someone about this podcast goes a long way. We appreciate your support.
Yeah.
Next episode is season 5 finale. We're ready here.
Oh.
We are going to hear about the tumultuous reigns of Gundobad's son, Sigismund, and Godomar II. Godomar.
Oh, Godomar. But we don't have a first.
Yeah, we do. He died. He was Prince Godomar.
But why is he the second if he was Prince?
Because history.
Enter confusion here.
Exactly.
Oh, well.
History's confusing.
Well, that's, alrighty. So, just so you know, everyone, just to let you guys know, good the bad's always happy to go to church with you, just don't make him mad.
And with that, the king and queen are dead.
Long live the kings? Why is he the second? In the city of Townsville, blood has been spilled on the holy altar, a city is ravaged, and innocents are put to the sword. Vengeance is mine, says the king. This is the Quest for Power. I'm not going to keep that.
Okay. I was like, fascinating. I was not expecting that.
Blood has been spilled on the holy altar. No.